Okay, so people, it is part two of this week's Echo Chamber, and we've got a new indie flick and a conversation with its writer and director. A lot of fun. So, let's get into things. Okay, people, so let's start off with our film in this episode. It is Elementary. Okay, people, so today I had a chance to check out Elementary, right? This is the new film from Terrence Arline. He wrote and directed, right? It is produced by Arline along with Charles Cerrone, Mija Edwards, and Cleo Fluka, with Cholly J executive producing. Charles Cerrone also handled the cinematography. We don't have a whole heap of other information though, unfortunately. Now, in the cast roles, let's take a look and see what we have. Right, so we have got so Yvonne Adams is played by Kenesha Pickney. Her husband George is played by Tyrone Nathaniel Reeves. Their son isn't listed. Their son Morgan isn't listed, which is odd. Then there's Neil Reddick and his wife Sylvia. So Neil is played by Sean Paul Costello. His wife Sylvia is played by Juliet Valdez. We have got Brian White, played by Charles W. Harris I. Louise Juma, played by Glenn Plummer. There is Principal Athena Lockett, played by Finjua. Right, there's Miss Kathy Williams, one of the teachers. Crystal T. Williams plays her. And another teacher, Steve Konicki, played by Sean Shillingford. Right. Oh, the Riddick's daughter, Tori, is played by Francesca Rain. Right. We've got Samantha, played by Ziva Jane. Simon Russell, played by David Lee Denny Jr. The police chief is played by Anthony Wilcox. We got the woman in the bar, played by Marcia Marie. There's Chris Cunningham, played by Big Daddy Kane. Yep, that's right, people. Big Daddy Kane is in the piece. Officer Brian is played by Cody N. Carter. And one of the students is played by Olivia Seidelman. Yeah, that's our main group. So the gist of the story is a young couple's world is shattered when their child goes missing in broad daylight. Shortly after, another child disappears mysteriously from school. When the parents get little help from the police and their kids' teachers, they band with the other couple to take matters into their own hands, taking control of the school in their search for answers about their missing children. So, yeah, that's the gist. Now, I mean, kid abduction, right? Trafficking is a horrendous thing. And I don't think you need to be a parent to emphasize, to understand what that must be like, you know, for the parents, for the child, for the community even. Obviously, if you're a parent, it's gonna hit a little differently, You know, because that must be a constant fear, you know, when you let your kid out, right? What's, will they come home? Like, what could happen? You know? So that's a big one. And we've looked at a few films dealing with trafficking, like Maya, The Girl in the Back Seat, just come to mind, Lord of Misrule, right? There was a kidnapping in that. So it's a big thing. So I think shining the light on these situations is real important. Real important. It is weird though, because the synopsis only talks about two. But there is at the very, literally at the start of the film, it's no spoiler. At the start of the film, we have a girl, girl. I think it was a girl, stolen from a playground. And he's fine because that isn't necessarily referenced much. It's not really referenced much. There is a nod to it at the end. Right. There is a bit of a weird situation between the mum and George Adams, which it's a little on the nose, right? But yeah, so we're dealing with this. And I think what the film does do is demonstrate and showcase those emotions that a family would be going through, right? Some of like those arguments. Now, I will say there is a moment when George turns right to Yvonne and he's just like, look, if you're not going to leave me, you gotta, you know, start loving me again because I'm in pain too. And it is a bit like, I get it, but I mean, not much time has gone, right? Not much time has gone. So to ask someone to put emotions aside, you know, is a little crazy. But yeah, we do see those raw emotions, you know? And that's big, right? That's big. Now, plans, the plan, right? The big idea does seem a little crazy. Does seem, especially when I feel, you know, like Neil, he knows his wife, right? And we're kind of given the implication that she might be both bipolar. Okay, so I feel Neil gets that, but there's no, okay, let's hold on for a second. What are you looking to do here? Right? And then it's like, oh, what? How? You know, he's just like, come on now, you know your wife, right? You know the situation. So, you know, there is that. I do think you do kind of know. I think there is a idea of someone who might be involved. Now, there's definitely some surprises here. Definitely some surprises here, which is always a good thing, right? That's always a good thing. So that's great. And one thing that I think was, there's just this music. There's mood music throughout. I did think they went a little heavy on that. You know, did very well getting the emotion, but way too much mood music. You know what I mean? I don't think it helps a film. Yeah, you know, I think it just distracts, really. So yeah, it's interesting, right? It's an interesting one. It's not a perfect film. It's not a perfect film. There's, you know, I think there's certain bits that could be tightened up. I don't necessarily think it needed to be the length it is. It could be a little shorter. But, you know, it does a good job of, as I say, getting to those emotions. So if this sounds like, if you enjoy, right, those films that try and talk on certain topics, right, if that's something you like, you know, and it's not offensive, Although with the topics we're dealing with, it's not crazy. I think you could show this to a young audience and you'll be all right. Right? You obviously it will spark some conversations, but that's a good thing, right? So yeah, I think anyone that enjoyed stuff like Into the Spotlight, right? Yeah, maybe like Why Men Are Clueless. I think like off, but possibly like Maya, Girl in the Backseat. It's not as strong as those, but it does still touch on those important factors. So if those are your type of films, then Elementary could well be for you, right? It's available now on all your favorite VOD. So yeah, the links will be on the website, people. So yeah, there you go. Elementary. It's an interesting film dealing with in important topics. So we go check it out. So now we've looked at the film, it's time to get to get it on with the guy who wrote and directed, right? The mastermind behind this. People, I had a great conversation with Terrence Arline. So, boom, now it's time for you to listen. Check it out. Here is Terrence Arline. Okay, people. So today I am joined by Terrence Arline. Is that
Arlen, yes.
right? Awesome. Yes. And we're here to talk about your new film, Elementary, right? So I believe this is your second feature film.
No, actually have quite a few other ones out in the world. I actually do a lot of producing, so although I may not be in a director's seat, I'm behind the scenes working on a lot of feature films. But I Love Juliet is a feature film that I did not write, but I directed. So that's out right now. I believe it's on Tubi. Last Shot is the first film that most people reference to. But there's quite a few more that are either in the works of coming out, which is Too Toxic. We also have Dying Roots and Forsaken All Others. So they'll be out this year.
Okay. Yeah, I should say that your second directorial effort, because you've been working in the game for a minute, you know what I mean? But yeah, IMDb doesn't always give you the most up-to-date information.
Yeah, I Love Juliet. That's the second one to be released, and then this will be the, I would say, the third where I'm in the director's seat and producer. So
Right. So, how are you finding things, man? What's this journey been like for you?
I mean, it's everything that I sought out for. It's not easy. It's a challenge. You really have to go through a lot, and it's about becoming. So in life, you're trying to become. As a filmmaker, I'm trying to become. And in becoming, I'm about 10 years in. So as a 10-year-old and not dog years, we're still babies. We're still learning a lot. We're still evolving until we're still really finding our voices. We're finding our niche. So for me, I say, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm excited for the future. I'm excited just to work, on a project that we have now and the ones that soon to come. But yeah, I love where we are.
That's great, man. Yeah, I mean, if you enjoy what you're doing, right, it allows you to be free with it. And that's a
Absolutely.
big thing. That's a big thing, right? So, but what was the catalyst? What was the thing that made you go, you know what? I feel I could step behind that camera. I feel I can tell a story.
Well, I started doing comedy in 2004, and before that, I was telling stories. But I then wrote a book titled Circumstances, and it received 4 stars. Yeah, so that's when I knew I could tell a story.
Right.
And these are like some of the top critics in the United States. And when I got that stamp of 4 stars because of a story, it got me into film. And that's what it's really predicated around for me. It's really making sure that we're telling a great story. You may not always have the budget to make this high-end quality, you know, film, but if it has a great story and you put the time and effort to telling it correctly, through the writing and then through, you know, storytelling behind the camera and in front of the camera, casting is so important, you win. And I think that's what we did with Elementary.
Yeah, no, for sure. That is definitely, you know, all those components need to come together to be able to, you know, have the right kind of resonance that you want from something. Like, was storytelling your form of comedy? Was that the style of comedy that you had, or were you more one-liners, punchy, kind of hit?
Both. Okay. I tell stories, and sometimes it depends on the audience. I have a great judgment of people. So I read the audience for the most part, and that allows me to gauge what type of jokes they're looking for. Because if you understand ages and demographics, same thing we deal with in the film industry, you're reading the ages and demographics of what is watching, what time frame, what type of projects. So it's the same thing with telling jokes. It's understanding the demographic and making sure that you're catering to them, because I can laugh at my own self and I can think everything I make is great, but if the audience and the people don't believe it's great, then they're the only people that truly gives a stamp of approval on my book.
So when you transitioning over to film, and it's thinking about the kind of stories that are out there, right, the stories that are popular and the stories that you want to tell, right? So what's that like, right? What's that kind of thought process like? Because I think sometimes there's the things you want to do, but then the things that you have to do. So, you know what I mean? How open was the creative process at first for you?
When we realized at our company, Arlen Entertainment, that we are focused on conscious content, it became a lot easier, because some people make movies that don't have an ending that is trying to provoke change, provoke justice, provoke something. Ours always are, and they're all predicated around a true story. So when it has truth to it, it has the essence it needs, and then writing the stories are a lot easier when it has a backbone already, and it's really about you trying to make sure that you captivate the audience in a way to make them watch and listen and understand what the message that you're trying to tell.
Okay. Right. So do you kind of, if you're using that approach, do you sometimes see something in the news and think, okay, there's something I need to talk to on that topic?
Absolutely. Right. Well, I have so much writing that is really generated around just the simple sitting down and watching the news. And then where I'm from, the crime rate and the murder rate is extremely high. So for a person that has children, for a person that is a father that is raising children on a daily, for a person that understands the growth of a human being and the time it needs to truly reach those peaks, when you're growing up around a lot of death and stuff like that, and you're seeing and you're hearing it, the only way that you can, depending on what type of artist you are, is tell your story and tell a story that hopefully provokes those changes. Because that's our voice. That's our way to speak. So we do it through film, and others do it through music, but my way is writing. So I do it through writing, period. So yeah.
Right. Like, is there a difficulty in that, you know, in that approach? Because you want to touch on like the realities of life, right? But sometimes you can be too real, right? In the essence that people oftentimes are looking for that escape. So if you're giving them that hard, gritty reality, it could push them away. But on the flip, there's these messages that are so important to talk about, because they're oftentimes, for whatever reason, moved out of the news cycle. You know what I mean? Like the couples found in elementary, right? There's these topics that for weird reasons aren't talked about. So on the one hand, you want to tell those stories. On the other, you don't want to have people be like, I can't deal with this. You know what I mean? So how do you find that balance?
Once again, it's about creating conscious content, is about provoking. And those people who are conscious are open to watching things that they can be provoked for change, good or bad. And some people that are, I feel like, they aren't conscious. They don't want to open their eyes to certain things like that. They don't want to see the reality that's what's going on in the world. They also don't watch a lot of movies that are, let's just say, like, you know, racist background, because if they don't want to deal with that, they don't believe it's real or really happening, then I'll shut it off by watching it. We make movies for people that are conscious, that want to, you know, learn more about what's really going on in this world. And then we're figuring out ways to change it, to make things better.
Yeah, no, it's an important thing, man. It's definitely an important thing. So where did the story for Elementary come from? Like, what was the thing that drew you to this and made you feel like, yo, this needs to be my next project?
It really happened. My son was given a detention, and I didn't know much about the school system that he was in. This was his first year there, and they were really strict.
Mm.
Once he got his detention, he had to ride on a late bus. And there's a lot of different people in the building after hours that I don't know nothing about. I don't know who people are. So when his bus pulled up and all the neighbors' kids who are in extracurriculums or what have you got off, and my son did not, it triggered something in me that, I mean, for 6 minutes, I called around, we called school. No one knew where he was at. There was another second bus. They knew there was other buses, but they couldn't tell exactly what bus he was on, what number. They didn't know who the driver was. There was no one to call. And after that, another bus pulled up. 6 minutes later, my son got off. And the story developed from there, because it was like, right, there was so many things that I didn't know. There was so many fears that entered my mind that I was like, who else has this happened to? Who else has ever dealt with something like this? Or this is a temporary loss, but this should never happen. And we have to create a better way in the system. And I created a story that I felt like would provoke people to want to talk about it.
That, I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, there's, you know, I think looking at this film, I'm not a parent, right? But I feel that you don't have to be a parent to be able to understand what it would be like for someone to lose their child. Well, not even lose their child, have their child taken, right? But there's things like, you know, what you just said, the whole bus thing. You don't even fathom that, right? In my head, you kind of think, oh, the school would call and let parents know, right? That, oh, your son, your daughter, they're being kept behind, right? So you know what time they'll be home now, right? You feel that there'd be this system. But when you hear these things and there's not, it's crazy, because everyone knows the reality of life. There are these people out there taking kids, you know what I mean? Like killing kids, like all this messed up stuff. So like to feel there's not a level of protection is just wild.
Yeah. Well, I think also when you understand how much a child is worth and what they are able to obtain from a human body, a human life, and over a span of 10 years, how much money you can accumulate from transplants and blood fusions and bone marrow and plasma, that everybody's not always donating these things, but
no,
trafficking is a way that they can take you from just more than, you know, sexual trafficking. That's one huge way, but there's so many other ways that why they're doing these things. And I just feel like, you know, the more that people are aware of it, the more that we can do more about it, because this is international. This isn't just, you know, happening in the United States. This is happening all around the world, and it's been going on since the beginning of time. So at some point in time, we got to figure out a way to change the world.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible thing. You know, every now and again, these stories hit the news, right? I remember a few years, it's probably a decade ago, that it was discovered on the ferries, right? The ferries going across the channel. And I think it all stemmed from an oil strike, right? So you had these lorries sitting around, and then someone heard noises, and it happened to be like had a load of people in the back of one of them. And you know what I mean? So sometimes these things hit the news, but not often. And as you said, not all trafficking is sex trafficking, right? There's so many other components to it. So yeah, it's a situation that people really do need to be aware of. So I think it's with stories like this that brings it into the, you know, consciousness of the general public. And that's real important.
Yeah. And also, you know, and our endings are what we would like to see happen. So for us to be visionaries and believers of, you know, what we put in the air can manifest, then these children, you know, there could be happy endings. All stories don't have to end tragically. And that's what I believe. And that's what we're creating at my company, Arlen Entertainment. That's what we stand on. Like I said, conscious content and finding the vision behind our projects, finding the content to create is honestly easy because the passion is behind it. We're parents and we're sons. We're brothers. We're cousins. And we care about those people, and they went missing. It's no different than missing a child. So to us, you know, our community, our family, they matter. So
yeah, no, that's real, man. Though I have to be honest with the ending. I don't know. I kind of felt 3 years weren't long enough. Kind of felt 3 years weren't long enough for what happened.
And everybody is due to their own conclusion of it, because you know what you deem fair and right, but for us, for them to serve anything is better than them walking away free. We watch movies where these people walk away completely free, never have to do a lick of time or anything. For ours, we said we're gonna be true to it. Everybody's gonna do it, and at least, you know, the reuniting, the I'm trying not to make sure I say too much about that. But yes, we want to keep it as realistic as possible. I know our time frame could have been a lot older, but then we would have had to grow that young lady up more also. So
I mean, I feel that with something like this, there probably would be a level of leniency for what happened. But the reason I say longer is just for the other children, the impact it would have on them now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you, in trying to do the thing for you, you've now put a level of trauma on other people. And that's the only thing, because I'm like, yo, of course you are going to try and do everything you can, but there's that aspect of it. I was just like, yo.
Yeah. I think there's an element of life that if you can just understand that trauma is presented around corners of school and corners of sports and just watching it or playing it or just being out in the world and seeing a car accident, the trauma's there. Yeah. So it's all about learning how we deal with it, learning how to grow from it. And it's never overcoming it, but it's learning how to cope with what we're learning, what we're seeing, and what we're understanding. So yet again, in our traumatizing times in life, you're trying to find ways to grow and go through it. And then you see that to and through throughout the movie. Everybody's trying to figure this thing out. And that's what you're doing in life through all obstacles. For what? One conclusion. To be together with the people you love.
Yeah. No, true, man. Like, it's kind of crazy if you think about it. That's not taught in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
There's not a social preservation class, right? That deals with all of these conflicting, you know, aspects of life, you know, the things to look out for, right?
Yeah.
Ways, you know, what trust is, what love is, you know, just these things. So we're giving kids the ammunition for life because, you know, we're teaching them maths, we're teaching them English, you know, these things,
mm-hmm.
but we're not actually teaching them life.
Yeah.
You know, or communication. And how do we expect them to function without those things? You know, it's kind of crazy.
That's where, and this is all truth behold, it's where parents come in. And parents doesn't mean birth, biological, blood. It means the community of people who understand that this child needs to know these things. And then they teach it, and they go through the gauntlet of trying to teach someone who probably don't want to be taught, but they have to learn certain social skills and certain things to be able to really communicate and travel throughout the world. And I have to say, like, as simple as a plane, travel throughout the world to be able to live without running to chaos because you didn't know. And it's so simple because, I mean, like I said, from living in the East, traveling to the West, going down South, and just being in the North at times, just being in all the different parts of just the U.S., you have to know where you are because there's just different places, it's different worlds, even though it's one United States. So, and it's important for parents. And it's sad because all parents don't know how to be parents.
No.
But that's where it starts, because when they bring a child to this world, if you can guide them correctly, and then when they go into school, they're there to learn what they need to learn, that mathematics and stuff like that. But they have those other nuances because they were taught that in the basis, in the core, before they walk through any door. So it's parenting.
It is. But as you said, not all parents are created equally. You know what I mean? So, like, there's those kids that aren't getting that. And it's like, and also you think about, like, behavioral change, right? It's not a quick thing. So it's the repetition. The more you see it, the more it embeds itself. So if there was just a couple of hours a week at school, right, I feel that would be beneficial because, yes, there's the families who are teaching, who are nurturing, but the ones that aren't, the kid is still getting that somewhere, you know. So I feel, yeah, it's something that should be taught, should be educated, but it's not, which does then make, you know, films and stories vital, right? Because they expose people to these different things, these, you know, traumas, these situations, these circumstances that can impact you and can affect you in all of these ways.
I couldn't agree with you more that these things are needed in schools. We have a community that we do, and ours is not in schools yet, but we're trying to get it into schools because it's called Authentic Expressions. And it's literally the same thing. We're just a community where we're talking about what is troubling us on a day to day. Because in the morning, if we understand how to start our day, we'll have a better day. But a lot of kids are waking up in environments where they don't know how to start their day the right way. And we're just trying to help them with that. But also adult, because if your adult don't know how to start their day, then how does a children and how would a child? Because
yeah,
he or she has to be taught how to get up and conduct. So we're starting with adults, and we're trying to work it into the schools because it's just definitely needed. And then everybody has to have a place where you feel like you can speak and have your voice being heard. And if for the artists and the creators of the world, this is where we started, because a lot of us, we don't feel like there's a lot of people who understand us or understand our voices. So we are there just to support. It's a support group. All we want to do is support and hear you out. And yet again, it's a no judgment free zone. This is a beautiful place. We've been doing it for almost 3 years now. It's free, comes with food. We just want to love on people. So
Matt,
that's what Authentic Expressions is, man.
I mean, it sounds great, right? Because I think that's always the big thing, right? It is when you look at conflict resolution, a lot of times people just want to be heard. Right. When someone comes at you in a certain way, if you just be like, hey, just tell me what's the problem? How can I help you? And they'll spew. Yeah. They'll start off and be like, well, I want to. And then they'll be like, yeah, so it's just that. And yo, thank you for the time. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for hearing me. And it ends like that. Right. Because all they wanted was to be heard. Right. Without that judgment. So, you know, that kind of space is so valuable. So, man, props for doing that. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Now, with this film, right? What one thing I thought was interesting was, like, when you look at the poster, there's two kids on the poster, but there's three kids in the film. So what happened to the other kid?
More twist, more elements of the story. I like writing onions. Every story has multiple layers. So without giving you too much, you know, you enter in knowing that the truest element in this world is our children. So the story is titled Element Tori. So to those parents, their truest element is Tori. And what's the one thing that you are willing to die for? That one thing that you're willing to jump off the end of the earth for, to jump in front of a bullet for, is your children. It's your loved ones. And that's what that element is. That's Tori. So she's an amazing figure, and to her family and importance. And it's all about what her family's willing to do for her.
Yeah, they do a lot. they do a lot. What was it like working with that many kids? How interesting and new an experience was that?
Well, we were prepared. So we had a great pre-production. And then we had a great team of people who were there as our wranglers that were really tending to these children all day long, bringing them snacks, entertaining them, reading books to them. And then when they were ready, we were rehearsing with them and bringing them to set when it was time. So, I mean, shout outs to like our crew, Talisha Love, Courtney Brown. It was so many individuals that were a part of our production team, Marcia. They just really helped with the children and keeping everything calm, keeping them entertained, because there was times where it was over 30 to 40 kids. And yeah, snacks always work. They love snacks. But thank you to the parents, you know, all the parents that believed in us to allow us all that time with their children, because it was multiple days, multiple locations, different cities, because we shot in Philadelphia, New Jersey, which is I'm from. So it was a great opportunity to work with some phenomenal talent, and then just to have the trust in these parents and believe in us and our company, and you know, to give us their truest element with and trusting us with their time.
Yeah, what were those discussions like? Because, you know, I think parents thinking, oh, my kids can be in a film, great. But then you tell them what the film's about and be like, yo, that's a little dark, man. I'm not sure if I want little Jimmy being in that. Like, what was that like, having those conversations, convincing parents that this was, you know, a cool situation?
So the easiest way I can say it is I never had to convince anybody. For the most part, those who know me know that I do everything tastefully, that I am going to, I'm a protector. So I protect everybody around me. I don't even, and conscious content means, yes, they're going to be in this, but this is all safe.
Yeah.
So we made sure that they understood it very, very broad and true. But a lot of the community that knew me, that's been following me, it was a lot of their children that are in this, because they want their children to have an opportunity to become entertainers and artists. And my company is one of the first that provides that for them, without them going through the rigorous of having to travel state to states, and with the hopes of being in a film. You know, I have the guarantee, and that's what I provide for our community in Philadelphia and in New Jersey, South Jersey. It's just the opportunity to be in great films with great content that travels around the world.
Nice. Does it change, like, the financial aspect of filmmaking, like the insurance and things like that, to have like a whole gang of kids involved?
Yes. Well, even just the locations itself needed the insurance. So that had to be covered. And then you're covering your gear, and then you're covering your crew, because by some chance, while you're in the school and you're covering the school, cover the people, because if something ever happens to either or, then you're just covering yourself. So just making sure, you know, that you're aligned correctly, your insurances are correctly, your company's correct, you know, not just an LLC, but a corporation, and it's set up to be vented as such. So it was one of those things. It's a little nerve-wracking, but like I said, I had a great crew and staff throughout the hallways, throughout each classroom, throughout where everyone was, our cafeterias, our catering. Shout out to our sponsors, Chosen Restoration, YBM Clothing, Apple Effects, because all of the children's was wearing our stuff, and that was all made by those individuals right there. So, yeah.
Okay, so nice. Right. Now, like, you know, we have, you know, recently, you know, there was tragedy on the set of the film Rust, and they were using firearms and things like that. So when you hear about things like that, what is that like as a filmmaker, to know that even with these, you know, precautions and safeguards, things can still go bad? Like, does that give you a hesitancy to, like, use certain things in filming?
Yes, absolutely. One thing we don't do is use even the, when we use our prop guns are not even the ones that shoot the blanks.
Right.
Like, we just believe that we can add it in post and we'll do it in post.
Yeah.
There's never, and if you look closely, a lot of times, your finger, it's not even on.
Okay.
So their finger is placed outside.
Yeah,
so we're trying to protect each other. We do a safety meetings before we even start. We break down the entire piece in front of the entire crew, and then I always reiterate the Tom Cruise speech with on a at level one. If you ever heard the Tom Cruise speech after the firearm was touched on set, it broke the internet because what he said was said loud. If you're not supposed to be touching something, do not touch it. If there's a person that is in charge of that, let them be in charge of that. And I do not want to have to repeat myself, because when it comes to those things, I would literally dismiss a person from set permanently and never work with them again, because I don't ever want anyone to look at me as if I'm not being as professional as I can be when it comes to that, because safety is key. Safety is first.
Oh, for real. And the thing with that is, right, someone else might have done the thing, made the mistake, right, were negligent, but it comes on you as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, even though you might have had numerous conversations, you're very stringent, you've told people a thing, you're still getting the blame. You'll still be sued.
Yep.
You could still go to jail. So, I feel that's the right approach, man. Like, if people aren't listening, then, hey, they need to go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. And once again, when you have people trusting in you, they're trusting in your policies, they're trusting in your culture. And our culture is very, very honest, respectful, and safe culture. And that's just how we are. You know, we try to operate within means. We don't even like to work the 12-hour shifts. We really try to stay within the 8 to 10, because, you know, we just know that that just makes for a better culture, makes for better energy each day and more productive days. So we really try to do things the right way.
Hey, that's great, man. You know what I mean? I think when you do that, it resonates with people. Yeah, so people will want to work with you because they know you're doing things right, right? So that's always a big thing, man. Always a big thing.
Or they don't want to work with you because they know you're doing things right. Because everybody's not doing things right. So
I mean, that's
Not. They're gonna cut some corners. They're not gonna hire somebody that don't want to cut. It's a tit for tat sometimes, but you know, I love it. At the end of the day, it's our culture, it's who we are. So,
But hey, you don't want to work with those people, man. So, you know what I mean? If they want to cut corners, let them cut, but not on your time.
Absolutely.
Putting certain things in post, what is that like, right? How much? So when you're writing this script and you've got certain elements in it, right, and you're like, okay, so that's a post thing, do you have to then add on a certain amount of extra time for that process?
It's actually simple for me. I don't do too many things that I feel as though we have to add in post-production. But when you're doing a high-end movie, let's just say, I'm drawing a blank, but a lot of the Mission Impossible movies, like, that's a lot of thought process into the post-production, because it's a lot of CGI, it's a lot of effects, there's a lot of stunts. So I don't, because of budgets, I don't try to put too much demand on our post-production, in our storytelling, or in our action. So, for me, not as much to date, but that's more so a budget thing, because if you're going to do those type of effects, you want to make sure that they can execute them correctly, because if they don't, they're going to look cheesy like some of these shark movies. And I got some shark movies I want to do, but I can't do anything until I know we're going to be able to execute it of the level of, you know, the Meg. So
I think it was the last Fast and the Furious film. I remember I watched that and they were chasing a bomb through Rome with the cars. Like, that's some crazy shit, right? That's a level of post-production that's gonna be like, I don't even know how long that must have taken. That was some craziness.
Yeah. And the cameras, though, the camera angles that they are capable of because of the budget that they have, they're able to set up multiple cameras in various spots, and they're able to slick up roads and shut down locations so that they can perform their stunts. So it's an amazing thing what you can do with a beautiful budget. And we're gonna get there at some point. But yeah, that's one of those things that post production could cost a lot, but it's also knowing what you need in advance. So they hire these people in advance and they're already, but the right process, they're in the writing, they know what they need. So they're correlating this with their post-production team in and pre-production. So yeah, it's exciting when you get to work with, you know, the level of people and then the expertise that they bring to it, when you can see what they're able to do and they're opening you up to it. They're showing you what they think, cause they read the script, what they could add to it. That's how you know when you get to set what you can really execute, because he's telling you beforehand that this is what I'm capable of doing with a scene if you're thinking about doing this. So, you know, you talk out a lot of those stunts, you're setting them up so the editor kind of already knows what he's expecting to come in there and he's just piecing them together. So it's a full team of people that when you're doing it right. And then you got other people that, you know, they kind of do it completely different and they, you know, they do it all themselves. So, you know, me, I love having a team. I feel like the more creative we have, the better this thing is going to become, because more minds, greater thoughts. That's how I see it.
Yeah, no, that's real, man. That's real. Like, what was that learning curve like for you? Right. That understanding of what you'd like to do, but what's practical, you know, the restrictions of budgets and all of that kind of thing. Like, how long do you think that took for you to kind of, you know, comprehend in that way that you could really be efficient with the filmmaking?
I'm gonna be honest, I'm still learning, but I think I grew a really good understanding about, after like 5 years, of what was realistic of trying to do and how to do it. But this industry is forever evolving, which is the reason why I'm in it, because there's no true answer to anything. You're still learning it, and you're still learning how to be better for the next project, because each and every one is different. And it's going to be different, and what it's going to take to get it done and get it to you so you can see it is going to be different. So it's an exciting, it's a different, it's a roller coaster. That's why I don't get on roller coasters, because I think my job it's a roller coaster itself. My career is just it. So no bungee jumping, no jumping out of planes. I'm a filmmaker, and I think that is the ultimate, like, hype. There's a roller coaster.
Yeah. No, I hear that. Man, as like, boy, you know, 20 years ago, I was all like, yo, bungee jumping be fly, man. Oh, I could jump out of a plane. Yeah, swim with some sharks. That sounds cool. Yeah, now I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do any of that shit. Yeah. Nah. Yeah. I've seen too many accidents and things. I'm just like, yo, you know what I mean? Don't play with your life like that.
Oh man, listen, I don't think I ever want to do any of those. So I grew up in a rough place, man. We was experiencing so much just through, you know, going to school and getting home. That was enough. So yeah, I'm blessed. I'm 41 years old, and I'm just blessed to be here. And like I said, there's so much to come in the near future from me, from us. I appreciate you and taking time out and, you know, talking with me today, and open us up to the UK, because our editor is from there, who edited the movie, and haven't so we're hoping that people from, you know, you guys over there are checking it out and embracing this film, because we tried to make it as international as possible.
Well, I feel like these kind of stories, you know, whether it's set in a certain country, you know what I mean, it's dealing with, you know, a certain religion or, you know, a certain group of people, I think a good story will resonate regardless. Mm. You know what I mean? And a story like this, dealing with, you know, child abduction, man, like, those kids could look however. Mm-hmm. But it's you, unless you're a complete and utter monster, right? That's gonna resonate with you. Yeah. You know what I mean? That understanding, you know, the abject fear that must come on the child's part and the parents' part and the community's part, right? Yeah. I don't care what, you know, what race, color, gender, any of that stuff, right? That is palpable. You know what I mean? So I think your film, man, will definitely cross borders. You know, people will definitely be able to understand what you're doing.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's just, as I said, these kind of things, they're important, because, you know, kids get abducted all over the place. You know, there's, you know, cases all the time over here, right? Madeleine McCain being one of the biggest ones of recent years. But, you know, these things happen so, yeah, like, just too often. Like, yeah, too often. I mean, once is too often, but... You know what I mean? So I just think, yeah, people will be able to see it and get it, understand what you're doing. It's I think the only issue for, you know, guys like you is budget, right? It's, you don't have those marketing dollars to, like, you know, push things all over the place. So it's, that's the only thing, is that it's getting that word of mouth, so people know that there's this thing here, you know, for yeah, people to check.
Yeah, it's about building your community, and that's what we focus on. It's about the community. The community will talk, the community will spread the word, and more people who's becoming a community of Arlen Entertainment and what we do, whether they're in the UK or in China or United States, the community is broad, because that's what we got social media for. So we follow each other, and after following each other, we literally support each other from far, because now we can take these movies and bring it to the UK and do a premiere. We can take it to different continents to do premieres. We can bring the cast there, and in the future, we can then put on our next project in your city. So therefore, you can be a part of it. You can be in it. And I can also cast through you. So it's a beautiful thing that we can do. And that's what this time that we're living in presents us. So I hope everybody, you know, like I said, follows us, and we build on this community. And from there, you know, that's all I sought out to do, one person at a time.
Mm. Yeah. Have you being able to make any connections with, you know, school districts? Because, you know, I feel having this kind of thing play in schools, that's a powerful thing too.
Yeah, well, we're working with a few mayors, but the biggest thing is we partner with the Child Abduction Project, and they are, I want to make sure that I have some notes for you, but they are one of the largest, the Missing Children's Project, based out of Florida. And I mean, they have been doing this since the 80s, I believe. And right, they called us, this story resonated with them so much. They loved it because their first case was two young boys who left the elementary school. The last person that seen them was a teacher. They'd never been found. And this is 30 years later. Yeah. So for them, knowing that story, seeing this story that resonated with them, they called us, they loved it, and they were partnering with us, and we're putting together a huge thing and effort, because our whole thing is being proactive. let's be preventative. Let's not wait until something actually happens. So I got a lot of great ideas, and they're an organization that's looking for great ideas. So we're going to partner up, and we're going to see what we can do in this near future.
Boom. That's fantastic, man. That's fantastic. And that's the power of storytelling right there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's huge. That's big. And I think when things like that happen, right, it gives other people the impetus even to follow suit, right? So then other organizations in, you know, other states, you know, other countries can, you know, reach out and follow suit and, you know, do a similar thing.
Yeah, and that's the goal. I would love to be an advocate speaker on a lot of topics, just given an opportunity, because what I'm passionate about, you know, I want to speak on. But this is our first opportunity, and we hope other people watch this interview and reach out to us. Our emails are real simple. It's arlaentertainment@gmail.com. And all of our social medias is Arla Entertainment. So it's real easy to find us. And we're looking for, you, great people that want to make a change. And, you know, they have the dollar, but they're looking for the idea. And we have the idea. And we're looking for the people that want to put their money where their mouth is. And let's do something huge, tremendous, that's thought-provoking, that could change this world. And if not the whole world, at least our world and our community around us.
Well, you know, it's that ripple effect, right? Where you start making moves one place and then it erodes, right? It starts moving and moving and moving, and then boom, you've got a huge movement, a global movement, you know? So, you know, with time it happens, man, for sure.
Absolutely.
Like,
one person at a time.
Yeah. What do you have, like, are there other kind of topics that you want to touch on soon? Right, things that you may have seen and you'd be like, yo, I've got to, you know, I could tell a story around that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a lot of stories that I want to touch on, a lot of different topics, but I'm thinking my next one is more of a biopic. It's more of an inspirational story. It's an overcoming story, because I think that's what more people need to understand now, that when you're born in the worst situations, when you're provided the worst parents, when you're provided the worst equipment, the worst clothes, that don't mean that at the end of your run, you won't be provided the greatest riches, the most riches, the highest riches, and the finest life, because it can happen for you. So I got a story that's true to me because it's about me. And it's just a sports story, but it's a sports story. And I feel like it's going to allow us to work with a lot more kids. So we're going to triple that number that we first had, probably quadruple that number we first had. And then it's going to allow us to bring a lot of our fun celebrity friends that we've been looking to work with, that are interested in and love teaching and working with kids. And we got some great projects coming up. So that's one of the next ones. But it's going to be a book, a documentary, and a feature film. So they're going to come in a three-part.
Nice. That sounds good, man. That sounds good, right?
Thanks.
And I think that's definitely, you know, I mean, that's definitely a big thing, right? Because you can grow up with a lot of things against you. But I think you then hit that crossroad, right, where you can make a choice. It's not an easy choice, right? But you can make that choice to be different, right? To follow a different path. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we see stories where people grew up in you know, with a tough situation, and so they just went down that road. And it's just like, you don't always have to go down that road. You can, you know, make a choice. Sometimes it's, as I say, it's not easy. It's difficult, and you know, sometimes the choice comes a bit later, you know, but you can fall down, get back up, and make another choice. You know, and you don't have to live with that first choice that you make. So seeing those kind of stories, I think that's really vital.
Yeah, well, that's what you just hit on is the key to life. Everything, me and you, you and I want to make sure I hit on this before I get off because my phone about to die. But you and I, we chose to take this call, to sit on here and to talk. You chose to eat what you ate today. You chose to put on the shirt that you chose to put on, the shoes you chose. Because if you got more than one pair, then you chose the pair you wearing today. We choose everything all day. If it comes to the most important things in our lives and we got to make a choice, then it's more important for us to be conscious that we need to make that choice and stop putting it aside, putting it off, or not doing it at all. So,
yeah, no, that's big, one man. Of the things that's that, big.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So if your phone's going to die, let's, before it goes, how can people keep track of everything that you're doing, man?
Well, on social media, it's Arlen Entertainment. I'm on IG, I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook, and we post a lot there. I speak a lot there, and then for the movie, it's elementary.film.com, and it got all the updates on the film and everything that we're doing there. But pretty much, I am active on my social medias. I do answer DMs. So as long as they are positive and they're we're talking something productive, I do. But yeah, I'm pretty active on there, not daily, but often. So just all entertainment. And, you know, I'm looking to connect with great people that's trying to do great things. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, people, the links will be on the website. So make sure you go and keep track of everything that Terrence and his peoples are doing, because my man's spreading positivity, and hey, the world needs more positivity for sure. You can't have too much. So, man, give Terrence a follow. Go check out the film. Again, links on the website, so you can get it on all those VODs. You know what I mean? Get some elementary in your life and stay tuned for what is next from Terrence, man. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.
All right, man. You take care. And make sure you stop by and we can talk about, you know what I mean, the next project.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it.
All right, man. Take it easy. Bye. Yo, so there we go. There we go. Terrence phone. Yeah. So what happens when you don't charge back, true? You know what I mean? But we still got a good conversation out of that, right? So I hope you enjoyed it. You know, the film is out on VOD already. So, you know, the link's on the website, so you can go check that out if it sounds like it's something for you. And remember, we looked at 5 films in part 1, right? So yeah, go check that out. I mean, there was Spaceman, you know what I mean? Quintessentially Irish, Hispanic, right? Satanics, but Hispanics, right? There was that, man, and some others, like An Affair in Egypt. Man, we looked at 5 films. So boom, go check out part 1. Share with your friends, and we will see you next week. Peace.